Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Phil from Palo Alto. Welcome, Phil.
Well, hi, Michael.
Great to have you on the air.
Well, it's great to be on the air.
Great. And I understand you're going to tell us about a yard sale.
Yeah. The Zen Center in Palo Alto is going to have its second annual fundraiser yard sale for Living Compassion for the Bridge Walk.
Great, great. And I understand.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say last year we had our first annual, obviously, and it was just so much fun that we could hardly wait to have our second one.
Yes. And as I understand it, there are lots of fundraisers of many different kinds going on around the country, actually all the time, to support Living Compassion and the Africa Vulnerable Children Project in particular.
Yes, there are all kinds of things that we can do as fundraisers to support the African project, as well as even just for Living Compassion. The yard sale seems to be a very popular one, however. It's why I think one of the most popular people seem to enjoy those.
Yes. Just as you were saying that, I had this image of clearing out ourselves in the same way that in practice I'm looking to see my conditioning, and although some part of me would like to just put it on the street and sell it or get rid of it, there's a way in which I can see that for what it is and see how that doesn't serve me in my life anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, and the yard sale's a really good image for that, isn't it? It's a lot of letting go.
Yes.
When we have a yard sale and cleaning out and taking stock of what needs to go and what is allowed to stay and like that.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
I was just also thinking when I was thinking about the yard sale, I know in San Diego they have a really wonderful yard sale and been doing it for many years. And I think last year brought in something like $3,000.
Yeah.
I know that ours, being our first year, I thought we did very well. We brought in, I think, $1,500. And the beauty of it was, for me, it was such a Sangha experience. It felt kind of effortless because everyone was taking part in the effort,
Yeah.
And I just thought it was so almost magical the way, at 8:30, all of a sudden, the yard just got full of people and full of things.
Yeah.
And everybody stayed. That was the fun part. I think people stayed, brought their stuff, saved, and managed their booth. Kind of like having a little kiosk of people selling their wares. And it made it so. I just felt really good about the whole thing.
Yes, everybody coming together in that way.
Yeah, it was just so wonderful. And then, of course, any of the things that didn't sell, we took over to the Ecumenical Hunger Project, and so they, got the last of our cleaning out.
Yeah, really finding a use for everything that we have.
Yeah, so it felt good. It feels good, at least to me, either giving away or selling for this kind of purpose things that I have. It just feels like, that they really are doing the things themselves are doing some good in the world.
Yes, that's great. And for me, it's so wonderful in that same way, that saying of, my trash is someone else's treasure, of really seeing from another perspective, what's possible in the same way we do with practice.
Exactly, in the same way we do with practice, yeah, just what is possible with just it's like practice, like you said, too. I was just thinking in the effortlessness of it, the effort we make becomes effortless when we get into that centered place and just move through whatever needs to be done. And so, yeah, the whole experience of the art cell basically is the experience of how at center all this can be done with, in a sense, with not only a lot of fun, but, just with that experience of kind of that miraculousness, the gateless gate, once you're on the other side of it.
Yes, yes. And as you're talking, it reminds me of being at the monastery in the sense that when I'm there, I get a sense that everyone is really committed to the venture as a whole.
Yes.
And really trying
yes.
to trying to get out of what my ego wants to, quote, contribute to that.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
really in a more selfless way, how can I see what's possible for the whole and really see the greater good that's possible here?
Yes. And I think part of why, this whole thing, why we're talking about a yard sale and looking at it also in a spiritual light is that it is so spiritual the way we do it. We're sitting there having fun interacting with the people and in some instances when it's necessary interacting with each other, and yet we're very much aware of the privileged environment and keeping that, in a sense, that sacred space, and that also is just part of it. And it doesn't hurt that we're in such a beautiful location.
Yes. Yes.
As is the monastery,
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So everything that we're doing is practice.
Everything that we're doing is practice. Yep.
Whether we're sitting in meditation or in group discussion or supporting the Africa Project through a yard sale, it's really, in my experience, coming from the mind of meditation, respecting the privileged environment, bringing my projections back to myself, and really seeing the ways in which I'm contributing or not contributing to the, what the overall goal is.
Yes, and that's really good. There's a lot of, I'd say, even right within the yard sale, and particularly in the cleaning out business, looking within and seeing a lot of what's going on, as we are practicing with yard sale. Yeah, it's kind of like, when we say sitting meditation, walking meditation, eating meditation, it was really an experience of yard sale meditation,
Yes. Yes, yard sale meditation, that's a great one.
Yeah.
And I know for me, in an experience like that, I can see how my, quote, better ideas, unquote, really can be at odds with what we're trying to accomplish, which is working together to a common goal.
Exactly. They do get in the way, don't they?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. We don't want to interrupt the flow of the universe with our better ideas.
Yes.
Good. Yeah.
And it's really powerful for me to see that and to recognize that that's what's going on and not needing to, actually say what's going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
But to recognize this is coming from conditioning, it's not going to be helpful. And, I'm not going to go in that direction.
Exactly. Yeah. It's amazing how much we can do in a yard sale, right?
Yes. Yes.
So much more than just selling our personal junk, as we say.
Yes.
Yeah. It's true.
A lot to see on every level.
It is, and it was. It was a great experience on all different levels. It's really true.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're very eager to have it again, and I believe an email went out or is coming out soon with the information about the yard sale. It's going to be June the 20th. I think that's the date, isn't it? It's a Saturday.
Yes.
And be at same as last time. It'll be here at 8:30 and. We hope people are saving their stuff and going to be able to come and bring it and stay with us and participate in this really wonderful experience. So when they get the email, they can just let us know.
Great. Sounds wonderful. I'll be there.
Good. So will I.
Thanks for joining us tonight, Phil. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
All righty.
Good night. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. Before we get too much started, you're very soft.
I'm very soft.
Yeah, I could hear Phil really great, but you were kind of quiet. So.
Oh, wow.
I just love it when Sangha gets together and starts out talking about a yard sale and ends up just talking about practice.
Yes.
And how everything is that, huh?
Yes. Is my voice better now?
No, you're still very quiet to me.
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm going to speak up as loud as I can here.
I'm going to stick my finger in my other ear.
Okay. I'll do it.
Yeah, that's I'm eager for this. I can't remember what was happening last year, last time the yard sale happened in Palo Alto, but I didn't get to participate in it. I was off doing something else, and this year I'm going to be in town, so I'm excited to be down there and, you know, collect some goodies.
Yes,
is
collect
what I'm
some
excited
goodies.
About.
Great.
Get rid of a bunch of stuff that I don't want, and get a new bunch of stuff that I'll love for a few minutes, and then maybe next year I can go back in the sale. we just keep cycling things around.
Yes. And the good news is that every transaction is feeding children in Africa.
Precisely. Yeah. That is the best of all aspects of it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm. Yes, it is. Sherry, we have many callers here.
Good. Was it just last week we had so much trouble? Or was it
yes, it was.
Yeah, so good. I'm glad we're not having that trouble again.
Yes. Part of me doesn't want to talk about it until later in the show when we're further along.
Good point.
Okay, great. Let's see how we go here. Okay, first call. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Carolyn in Boise.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
You know, I want to talk about some volunteer work I do as an EMT, but I need to say first that I read your last letter just this morning, and I really feel a sense of loss that you won't be teaching more.
So you might run into me more than you would think.
Well, I hope so. I'm really just discovering your teachings, and you know, they're really opening a path for me. And I'm hoping.
Here's the good news. Okay, I've been writing stuff and talking nonstop for over 30 years, so there is no lack of that information.
So I may have at least a little time that I can spend catching up, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Well,
and with this new direction, the main thing that's going to happen out of this is far less focus on being a CEO and doing that kind of work with the organization. You know, being a monk, I'm freed up to not have to focus on anything except practice. And then that practice will manifest in whatever it manifests, in whatever way it manifests after that. So as I indicated in the letter, you know, I have obligations. I'm one of those people who schedule. You know, I can't die in the next 16 months because I have too many things scheduled. So it's like that. So, yeah, plenty of time.
Good. I hope
yeah.
so. So I want to talk about some things that have been going on. I volunteer with a small rural ambulance unit where I live. Parts of it can be difficult. I actually tried calling in the last week or two and didn't get through, and at the time I thought what I really needed to talk about was just problems interacting with other volunteers and less on patient care, but, you know, it's actually become so some things have happened in the last few days and the last week, and it just seems like a really big tangle to me. I hardly know where to begin. I'm just floundering with it and don't know quite how to untangle and really want to bring my practice into this. Just hardly know where to begin with it, I guess. So it is always, this is always a difficult group because it's, you know, a bunch of people who, we do this because we, you know, all share this sense of urgency and this sense of, you know, wanting to do something important and things like that. And you put us all, and that's very good at the scene, but you put us all in one room and meetings, it's not, you know, it's not great.
It's not fun.
It's not a good skill for meetings. It's a good skill at a scene, I guess. And I actually walked out of a meeting a couple of weeks ago because I was just so frustrated, and I saw myself becoming angry, and I really did not want to be angry with these people.
Because they're good people.
They're good people, yes.
Yep.
And everybody, I mean, everybody is really trying to take care of community here.
Yeah.
But I was just so frustrated with them, and I saw I was becoming angry, and I didn't want to be angry at them. And as soon as I walked out, I started getting angry with myself that I had walked out and, you know, just tumbled into this big argument of, you know, well, I should be able to stay and work through this and just let things happen.
Okay, I can stop you right there because I can tell you where that little off little side road took you, and that's into conditioned mind and self-hatred. Okay, you should be able to. I like to compare that for people. You know, when the alcoholic hears the voice, the recovering alcoholic hears the voice that says, "But if you were the right person, you could tend bar." That's not a voice that's interested in your success. That's a voice that's interested in your misery. So let me. Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
Okay. So do you perceive that the other people involved also experience that there's a communication difficulty going on?
Well, yeah, I'm certainly not the only one who says, "Boy, this is a hard group to manage." I mean, everybody does, but you know.
Okay. All right. Good. And is there someone who is in charge, or is it kind of a free-for-all?
Well, there's some history here, and it's getting so nobody wants to be president or in charge, and the person that is not a very good leader, so it kind of is a free-for-all.
Let me ask you this. Since you're one part of a community, this particular group of you is offering one service in the community. Are there other people in the community who would perhaps be interested or willing to act in the as the moderator of this group?
I don't think so.
Well, that would be my encouragement to you. It is to, as a group, seek out somebody from the outside of the group who would act as a facilitator. Set some ground rules. You know, that's why there are, what are those rules called? Michael, what are those rules called? You know,
Robert's Rules of Order.
What is it?
Robert's Rules of Order.
Robert's Rules of Order. That's why Robert came up with those. So that, because this is what happens to people when they're left to themselves. You know, it's not an unusual situation at all. I bet we could ask everybody who listens to this show to call in with their own example of what it's like to be in a situation of peers attempting to accomplish something.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've tried to kind of tease out of this tangle seems to be that I have a lot of assumptions and beliefs as I try and work in this setting, and I think a lot of them have to do with, you know, the world according to Carolyn's version of of what dependability should be.
Yeah, Carolyn's reality. And the horrific discovery that we make that nobody lives in that world with us.
Well, that really seems to be the biggest challenge of all, I guess, right now.
So, you know, to me, Carolyn, there are a couple of ways to go. One is the first thing that I suggested, which is, you know, just don't assume that human beings are going to be anything other than human beings, and then take the steps that are necessary to make sure that your neighbors and other folks in the community get scooped up in an ambulance when they need it, because that is the real point of this, it seems, that people are served in that way. The second thing is, the other approach to it is, you use it as a workshop, and you kind of let go of any idea that anything is going to be different in this group, because I seriously doubt that it will, unless, you know, somebody takes those kinds of steps to bring order and structure to it. So if you wanted to go direction two, where this is a free personal growth workshop series that you get to participate in, and you go there, you know, before you go, you breathe, you meditate, you center, you do the very best that you can, you disidentify, you remind yourself who you are and what your priorities are and why you want to do this, and then you go in and you pay the best attention you can to what you're projecting and what those beliefs and assumptions are and which aspects of your personality come up and how difficult it is to disidentify. And then after the meeting is over, you leave and you journal about everything that you saw. You could do some process mapping about the different parts of you that came out in the self-talk and what self-hate tries to do to you. And, you know, it could be very illuminating.
So just witness that's happening and
use it
stop
as a retreat.
Arguing with myself about it.
Use it as a retreat. And again, I lay those out like that because to me they're two very different purposes. One, you want to help the community get a functioning organization to help people in a crisis. Two, you want to see what goes on with you that makes it so very difficult for you to participate in something like that.
And I guess, you know, that's the piece that I'm calling you about and asking for help with. But, you know, what happens is when there's an emergency and there's good teamwork, and that happened just this weekend, and there's good teamwork, you know, I love these people. I just think that this is, it's really wonderful to be able to work together and help that way, and then we walk away and, you know, it deteriorates into really frustrating and stuff
and
arguing stuff, and it really throws me around.
That would take you to choice number one, working with the community to bring conscious awareness to the need for organization and structure for the volunteer EMTs. Which could also, of course, be a tremendous spiritual growth opportunity.
I'll try them on that. You know, it has been very it's been very hard for to get the community to step forward. It's a very, and you know, there's a lot of stress.
Here's the thing to keep in mind: you're dealing with human beings.
That seems to be the challenge.
It is, isn't it? For all of us. We just keep on being human beings with all of our stuff.
Yeah.
It's the truth. All right. Well, let us know what you decide and let us know how it goes.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Oh, you're very welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Carolyn. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick...
Michael, you have slipped into the edge of the void.
Oh, wow. Can you hear me better now?
Not a bit.
Oh, wow.
I can hear what you're saying, but it's a real strain.
Oh, wow. Well, I will speak as loudly as I can.
All right. Yell at me.
Okay. We're going to take a sponsor break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Back to Open It with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have several more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Max calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Good evening, Max.
Good evening.
What's going on in Cambridge?
Well, I have something very hard going on, which is that my 15-year-old daughter tried to kill herself on Friday, and
Oh my God!
Yes, it was unexpected.
Oh my God!
Yes. So she's, you know, I've been in the hospital for like 5 days with her, and they moved her to a psychiatric hospital today. And she'll probably be there for a few weeks. And so I have lots and lots going on. I'm aware of lots of hard feelings. One of them is just very, I'm really angry. But I'm also, I just feel like we're on a whole another footing where, you know, I had no idea this could possibly happen, and now I feel like I have no idea for the rest of her life. I'll have no idea that it couldn't happen. You know,
yeah.
Like
so,
nothing
so,
ever.
So, Max, does it? Is it your impression that it came on that suddenly for her as well, or that she has been thinking about this for a while and you had no idea, or do you not have a clue about that?
Oh, it's quite clear that she'd been thinking about it for a while. This has really come out. She's actually been pretty, not so forthcoming with me necessarily, but she's actually been very pretty forthcoming with the people at the hospitals. So, So it was clear that she had made several unsuccessful attempts even before in a short period, but that probably what's going on is that she's been depressed for a long time.
And you did not know that?
No. Part of it is because she has a younger brother who's kind of spectacularly not so functional as she is. Like, she's a straight A student. She's been a straight A student all forever. She's robust social life. She's, you know, in the school play. She's, you know, giving piano recitals, blah, blah, you know, and he's kind of like, he needs a lot of attention and plans and stuff and, like, he's flunking everything and, like, so, yeah, he's the one that all the effort goes toward in terms of, like, trying to keep things on course. But she seemed like she was doing great.
And have you gotten any insights about this? And the reason that I'm asking this is that I was talking recently with another parent of a child about the same age, a boy, basically said the same exact thing that you just said about your daughter. Great grades, great social life, popular, lots of friends, very busy, very active. Boom, tries to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's what do people say about that? Because it's true, I think, that a lot of us would guess that we would know something like this was coming, that they would act in some way that would give some sort of a signal.
So, Sherry, I'm just going to be really, really frank, and I have a strong idea what it's about, and I'm sort of suspicious about it because I'm kind of blaming most of the whole thing on her father, my ex-husband.
Uh-huh.
She lives with him half the time, and it turns we learned recently that he had been leaving the two of them home alone in a town north of Boston where he nominally lives all night, every school night, while he went to work and then slept at his girlfriend's house in another town south of Boston. So many miles away, leaving my daughter in charge of my son, who, as I've described, needs a lot of stuff. So we didn't find this out. They're very protective of him. We didn't find this out until very recently, and I moved in to stop this. And so the situation got a little bit better, but after a month, she and the son were back with the father every other week, and he returned to not spending the night at his girlfriend's, but, you know, working in the evening and leaving her in charge until, like, midnight when he would come home, which is, like, kind of the end of the night for a school child on a school night. So I think she has a huge, you know, I think the whole thing boils down to being in charge of taking care of somebody else, not being able to take care of herself, not being taken care of by the parent that's supposed to be in charge, and just feeling overwhelmed. And the reason I'm suspicious about that is because, you know, it points all the blame at him.
Yes, of course. Yes. Uh-huh.
Which is kind of
I'm sure it's his fault. And so how are you coping here?
I'm feeling like spending time taking care of myself, but I haven't been back to work yet. I'm supposed to go back to work tomorrow. Now I'll leave less time to take care of myself. I'm a little concerned about that. And I'm looking at, you know, more weeks of at the hospital every day, you know, after work, hours at the hospital every day.
So now your
right.
life has added, along with your son and his difficulties and taking care of a teenage daughter, now you've and work, now you've got hospital.
Right. Right. And so I'm very in touch with this sort of resentful feeling of what life has just given me, like, this very much feeling like if it were somebody that was not my daughter, I wouldn't be participating. You know, I would be walking away.
And so all of or most of the emotion then gets directed at your ex-husband.
You know, actually, it feels a little bit dispassionate. Like I'm not. I feel some fury rise up toward him from time to time, and of course, angry with myself for not seeing any of this. Like, I thought, you know, there were some events leading up to this, her previous unsuccessful attempts, and I thought she was trying to get out of school just so she could stay home and sleep. I completely didn't see what was happening. I mean, there wasn't anything that would have pointed me in that direction, and I'm not really aware of hating myself for that.
Right. Well, yeah.
I couldn't have done anything different.
Right.
But,
well, and after the fact, we always know what happened.
Right.
You know, it's one of those where, yeah, I could have seen that. But what would have made me see that? you know, afterwards we can say, oh, okay, well, she was doing that or that was going on or whatever. But there's nothing going forward that would ever make you think that.
Yeah, the only thing that comes up. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say it would require a lot of paranoia to look at the world in terms of, you know, my child is getting ready to commit suicide.
Right. Yes, there wasn't anything. And I'm not aware of a lot of self-hating voices or recriminations or the thing that really comes up is, man, you should have sought custody before this.
Here's the deal, Max. This is the place to watch out for, because whatever doorway it can come in, this is going to be your fault.
Right. Yeah.
Sooner or later. Okay, so if it's not that you should have seen this or recognized this or this is proof that you're bad, you know, you should have gone after custody. And the reality is, I bet that would not have made you terribly popular with the kids.
That is the only reason that, you know, it would have destroyed my relationship with them.
Yeah.
It's very, very clear. It would have just been devastating.
Yeah, so just cut that voice loose, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because the thing that you don't need right now is the stress of any I should've, what ifs, if only, because that's just not going to be helpful.
Well, what comes up as being helpful is like actually just keeping my own schedule of getting up in the morning and meditating and making sure that I get exercise and rest and good food.
Well,
you know, not eat the hospital food under the fluorescent lights, and you know, make sure that I just keep those things in place.
And to take care of mom the way you would want to take care of children. With pretty much nonstop support and encouragement and attention and awareness and like that, compassion.
Yeah, okay.
That's going to be the critical piece. I mean, there are three people in this. I don't know what their father's going through right now, but there are three people that I know of who are desperately in need of a lot of care and nurturing and concern and kindness.
Yeah. So, Sherry, the voices are telling me definitely do not say this over the air in public to Sangha, but really not in touch with a lot of compassion for this girl right now. I just feel very, I feel kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, can you think of a reason that might be the case?
Yeah, several.
Okay. And it, up there somewhere on the list is the attempt to keep it together as best you can?
No, say more, please.
Well, that, depends on, let's see, if you were really to take in the magnitude of all of this, I project that there would be a huge temptation just to dissolve into a puddle on the floor somewhere.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I've caught a little glimpse of the magnitude occasionally. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you keep just a little bit of armor in place, there just might be the chance that you can get through this without coming apart completely.
Right. Yeah.
And if you can have some sympathy and understanding for that person who needs to do that, that's going to go a long way.
I do, actually. Yeah. I do feel very sympathetic toward that person.
You know, I have this little theory that if parents actually had the tiniest glimmer of what they were getting into, the human race would be extinct in one generation. You know, I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge sacrifice that parents make, because parents don't actually get it in most cases that we're doing it for ourselves. We think it has something to do with those kids who are never going to actually be appreciative of the life that was sacrificed for them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so here it is, that all these years, what you have gone through to try to make the best life possible for these children, and this is what it comes to. Got to be devastating.
See, I see them give that sort of love so freely to their father, who it seems to me kind of so selfish, like leaving them alone all night, every night, so he can be with his girlfriend. And they're very sort of attached to him. And I feel like, Jesus, I'm the one who, like, you know, I never miss anything. I blah, 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 you know.
Yep.
But,
yep. yep. So that person whose life has been sacrificed needs a lot of compassion, loving kindness, and understanding.
Okay.
And I'll bet you, if she is, I'll bet you'll be surprised to find out, maybe not, that she's probably not as old as your daughter.
Okay. I will look.
Do you get a feel for that? Somebody who says,
well, yeah.
Why me? Why me? Why do I have to go through this? Why don't I ever get to have fun? Why don't I ever get to do what I want? Why don't I ever get to be irresponsible? Why can't I just go off and leave them at home and have a boyfriend? Okay, so buckle your seatbelt.
Okay.
And keep in touch, okay?
Yes.
And do not let those voices have access to you for anything. Don't, if they want to start in about how you were in this call or what you said or any of that sort of thing, just say, go away.
Yeah.
And really mean it. Be very firm.
Yes, I can be firm.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Max. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it seems like we all need kindness all the time.
Oh, everybody, all the time. Gosh. Oh, it's hard to be a human.
Yes.
Mm.
And I'm grateful for the willingness of everyone calling into the show.
Yeah. And that, and the courage to put it out there.
Yeah.
You know, that we're in so much of this stuff because of all of those teachings about, well, you can't say that, and don't let anybody know that, and don't admit that, and, you know, don't ever let anybody, blah, blah, blah. So live in isolation, and your only company is the voices that are, you know, guiding you down a path of misery and ready to beat you bloody once you get there. For Sangha to be able to say this is what's going on, and all of us to go to a place of, yeah, I know that one.
Yes, yes. And for me, again, as always, the gratitude that the practice is available and that the teachings are here to
mm-hmm.
assist us in seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we're fortunate because there are so many people trapped in just unspeakable circumstances with no support whatsoever.
Yes.
No understanding that can give them comfort.
Yes. Sherry, we have several more callers here.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jenna from Pittsburgh.
Hi there, how are you?
Hi, good.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I spoke with you last week a little bit about romance, and or 2 weeks ago, and I realized that there was another piece of the picture churning, and of course it was more of conditioning. And I just kind of got lost and wanted your guidance about that.
I'll do my best.
You're so good at it.
Tell me what it is.
Well, what I realized, another piece was that because he isn't saying the words "I love you" yet, and it's been almost 10 months, which is very different from every relationship I've had, I'm really, this, you know, person inside of me feels really, really like sad and not loved just because he's not saying it.
And do you ask him about it?
Well, I did. I talked to him a couple months ago and about it after I first told him, and I was shocked that he didn't say it back. But he, you know, he kind of addressed, what he says is like, love ya, you know I love you, and like, I'm falling in love with you. He always says that. But he never says I love you. So after I got the courage to ask him directly, because I would ask him and he'd skirt around the issue a little bit, he was married for 14 years. He's in his 30s, like me, and he was married for 14 years, had one other brief girlfriend than me. And the dynamic with his wife was he felt that he was forced into doing or saying something, or not doing and not saying something. So he's really trying to come into himself and figure out what he wants and say things when he wants to say them. And he's not, like, unkind about it. He just says he doesn't want to be forced. He wants to say it. And he also said he wants to say it when he wants to say it. And he's kind of confused about, like, what it means. And what he said is that when he says it, it's going to mean, like, forever. And he doesn't want to say it before that because what if he has to take it back? And so he's got his whole other conditioning, his own conditioning, you know, in his mind, of course. But it leaves me sad.
Snow White and Cinderella.
What?
Too much Snow White and Cinderella. I love you means.
Yeah.
And we are going to be together forever. It's kind of, you know, country and Western music and Walt Disney.
Yeah, I know. No kidding. And I said that. I said, no, it doesn't. You know, in my mind, it doesn't. It just means I love you now. And then if we ever talk about what that means and it changes or we get engaged or this or that, he has this big loyalty thing going on. He always refers to being thrown away. So my connection is that he doesn't want to ever lead me to be thrown away. So he's just waiting. But it really bothers me. And
you know what my best encouragement is?
What?
Get over it.
That's where I'm stuck. I don't know how to get over it.
Okay. I do.
Okay.
Isn't that handy?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Go figure.
So you go to work on your relationship with the person, the young girl, we guess, who has this as an issue. And you find out everything that there is to find out about it. For instance, if he said it, now you've had other boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
They've said, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that turn out?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's things like, would you rather have a guy there who seems to be happy in his relationship with you and wants to be in relationship with you and treat you well and you enjoy and have fun with and all of those kinds of things, who doesn't say I love you, or would you rather have somebody who says it quite easily to pretty much anybody who comes along?
Yeah.
Okay, so those are important questions to ask yourself and to get clear about, and also to get clear about what's really going on with this gal, because she could ruin a good relationship for you.
I know. Seriously. I think there's been time. Like, he even said to me today, what are you worried about will happen? And my response was, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm with him on this one. You know, this is really your issue, and it's really important that you resolve it. Now, if you decide down the road that I'm sorry, I just do not want to be involved with someone who is so whatever I project onto him that he can't say I love you. I don't want to be in a relationship like that. Then good. Then you say bye. It's been great. I'm going to go do something else. If you decide that, well, you know, he's right. He actually, you know, does get to say it when he wants to, not when it's he's required to or forced to, or somebody's going to be really unhappy or withhold love from him or whatever is going on. So
you what?
I'm on his side.
So
I'm just kidding. There are no sides. But I do think that it is an issue for you to resolve within you without constantly dragging him into it.
Right, and I said that today. But there are other parts where I was able to kind of realize some things, like when he sees me, we work together, and then when he comes home, he's tired. Sometimes, like, he comes home, he doesn't look at me, or he won't say anything, or he'll just leave. And I realized, like, I wanted to be able to say, you know, what would really mean a lot to me is if you can look at me when you come home and we can talk, at some point. And instead of cast your eyes down, that you could just say hello. Like, it would be really special if you could do that.
Well, again, I think that that until you are clear about what's motivating you, you're asking him to solve problems that are yours.
However, I think that's a preference to me. I think that's a deal breaker. I think that if every time I see him, he can't look at me, that would bother me.
Well, I'm encouraging you to find out why. Why that bothers you. What's going on with that? Because what I'm hearing is a lack of openness to what's going on with him. It's, I want this, I need this, I want it to be this way. So the demands are always toward him. He needs to act this way, or he needs to say this, or he needs to be that way, or whatever it is. And those kinds of demands on him, you know, if you're making a request of somebody and you're very clear what's motivating that request, and you can be open to what's going on with the other person,
mm-hmm.
so that other person can also make a request that would be honored, that's one thing. But if it's an unexplored kind of emotional reaction or karmic reaction, then that, to me, feels like the kind of thing that each one of us needs to take responsibility for ourselves, not putting that on somebody else. And you know, if you guys were open to it, I would suggest that you find a really good imago therapist.
I would love that, but he doesn't have the time, nor would he make it. It's so difficult. His life is so stressful. We hardly get to see each other.
Okay, well, that's my... That's
However,
my...
we can talk about... We actually talk about it very successfully, you know, because I don't demand anything from him. I say, that would be really special if you could do that, you know, and I'll say... And I said, you know, because I feel, like, really unloved when you come home. I just feel neglected. Like, you leave or you make a face... Like, he'll make a face at me. Like, that's just hard for me. That's just kind of weird. I don't like it. And then
okay,
his
you know
response.
What? You know what? I think we've crossed the line here into an area that is unproductive.
Oh, how so?
Well, because I've said what I would encourage you to do, but for you to just tell me over and over what you don't like about him and how he is, there's really nowhere that we can go with that.
Well, when you pick a mate, though, aren't you supposed to like? Like, aren't you allowed to have preferences?
Well, yes, of course you're allowed anything you want. But this, what we're doing is not picking mates. We're doing awareness practice. And so within awareness practice, the understanding is that we look within ourselves for clarity. We're not attempting to change other people so that we will be happy. That's not a route that's ever going to actually result in happiness. So I hear that you don't like these ways that he is. My encouragement to you is to look at you and what you've got going on about all of this. Make peace with it within yourself, and you will be able to make a much clearer, kinder, possibly more potentially successful request of him.
How can I request of him if he just said I can't request of him?
You know what? This is when you listen to this, and
mm-hmm.
I would encourage you to, I think you'll hear what I'm saying. That the person that I'm talking to really kind of just wants to argue about this. And that's not my role.
I don't feel like I can say anything without being labeled arguing. I'm serious. I really don't know how. I'm totally confused on how.
I think if you listen to this in exchange, you'll hear what I'm pointing at.
Okay.
Okay, and
mm-hmm.
then let me know what you see,
or all
hear,
right.
as the case may be.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jenna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, once you swam in a river of
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two callers, and we have about 12 minutes left here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Rebecca.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, and hi, Michael, to you, too.
Hi.
Wow.
What's going on?
Well, this has just been such a heart-opening show. I just want to say, first of all, that the earlier caller was just very, I mean, it just, and hearing that exchange has brought up a lot of gratitude in me for Sangha and where we come and bring these huge things. And I just am grateful that for all the courage that's shown for
uh-huh.
people on this show.
Yeah.
And so I just want to really, really express that to everybody, all of us, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, let's see. So I also had something that I saw today that was fun to see, and I just want to share that around this whole process that I've been looking at, around the whole being in love and then being out of the relationship and how all this works, okay?
Uh-huh.
I saw myself starting to recreate the next chapter of the whole conversation with conditioning. I think I got to see the little seed of the whole how the whole story gets formed.
Oh my! Say more.
So yeah, well, I had a date yesterday, a first date with somebody, and so I saw today the story is getting created where I'm projecting, I'm being in relationship with the conversation, I'm building, obviously I'm not because I'm watching it all happen, but I'm seeing how it's happening, and I'm watching the temptation to slide into fantasy and the future and what if and, oh, this was so what, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And it's just been wonderful to see this. And it's like, okay, now I know the next step is that I start believing this story and that I want this to happen and then I'm disappointed that it does. I mean, I can just lay out like a step-by-step map directly to the pit of my own suffering.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking, and the kind of the previous caller too, there's just so... You know, the romantic comedy is such a popular form of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I think because it's in such close relationship with exactly that conditioning that you're pointing at.
Yeah. Well, you know, right now it feels kind of collapsed. You say in relationship with it, seems like it is it.
Yes.
Is that what you're pointing to? Like it's the exact same process?
Well, yeah. That the romantic comedy mirrors this this process that conditioning does.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I mean, because when you're talking about it, you know, we could almost start seeing the movie unfold. you know, there they are, they meet, and this happens, and then. She does this, and he's over there doing this, and then they get back together, and this happens, and there's going to be some kind of a misunderstanding, and there's going to be a big conflict, and then there's going to be, and it looks like it's not going to work, and then in the last 30 seconds, happily ever after.
Yeah, except you know and the serious, you know, the serious thing is that the price that I pay for this. For we all who indulge in this is so incredibly high.
Yes.
And I saw that too today.
How would you describe that? How would you describe the price that's paid?
The price is that, it's that, okay, I really had a good insight on this earlier. Let me see if I can, what comes up. I trade the story for any real possibility.
Yes, that's what I was seeing too. It you don't have a life. You have a story.
Yeah. And this person that I just met may be a really cool person that I'll never even know because I'm trading it for the story.
Yes.
And what a tragedy, not to mention the fact that my own life is being siphoned away because I'm trading it for a story too.
Yeah, and when you said that I'll never know, that is there's so many levels of that because if you're not actually available to be in relationship with a human being, so when you came on the line, you were talking about how great it is to be able to be real and authentic and, you know, have support for being who we really are. Then this conditioned story starts up and you being everyone who, you know, ever falls for this, which is every human being probably, you become the person who is living the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is actually not available for an authentic relationship with another human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, of course, we don't know what he's doing. He may be doing the exact same process.
You know, that occurred to me too, and I was thinking, they brought up kind of this wonderful koan question that I'm sure I'll be living with for a long time, which is, well, then what is a relationship? Then what is it to be in a relationship? I mean, isn't that just the best question to...
It is a really good question. And it should be definitely a class in junior high, right? And then and more advanced course in high school and then a really advanced course in college.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, nobody brings it up.
Yeah. And it's only, you know, in a time like this in my life when I'm realizing that I projected onto people that they chose conditioning over me, and I'm really following that projection back to myself and seeing all the times that
I'm startling yet helpful, huh?
Yeah. As this person said, it's like getting hit by a 2x4 from life, by life, you know. It's just so grateful for that slap, you know, to wake up and see that.
Yeah. So that would be a great project for you. What is relationship?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean? And so for all of the aspects of your personality, who's doing what?
Yeah.
Because the person who is who might be interested in a grown-up to share life with,
mm-hmm.
it has very different motivations from a teenager
mm-hmm.
who wants to live a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And very different from the person who says, but I don't like to fix things. And different.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And it also.
Go ahead.
And it also brings up then not only the relationship in this way, but relationship with everything. You know, relationship with living compassion, relationship with my children, you know, just that.
Yes.
Relationship in the broadest sense.
Yeah. What is relationship? How are we in relationship in life?
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Well, there's my koan.
There's
yeah.
your koan.
All right.
Have
well, thanks,
at it.
Sherry.
All right.
Night, Michael. Good night.
Good night.
Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a couple minutes and one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Can you hear us?
Oh, Michael, that is too funny.
Trying one more time. Next caller, can you hear us now? Apparently not. Sometimes we're just not open to the teachings.
Timing is everything, isn't it?
Timing is everything.
All yeah. right. Well, we did it.
We did it. Again.
Yeah, again. And so let's try it again next week.
Sounds great. That's what practice is, isn't it?
It is. Yep.
Committing and recommitting.
It yes, moment by moment by moment.
That'll be my practice.
Thing. Yep.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
Good night.